Hello and welcome to On the Corner, the official podcast of PitcherList.com. I'm your host, Eric Samulski, joined, as always, on this beautiful, beautiful fall day by Nick Pollock. Nick.
What is happening?
Fall is in the air. We've got two pretty interesting LCSs coming up. Yep. It's a good time for baseball right now.
It is great to see you. It is a wonderful time for baseball. It's October. You might see over my shoulder here, I have a new item. Mm. And there's a very long story behind that. But apparently, there's only one baseball uniform that is the Dodgers. So now I have Dodgers things, apparently. That is my face on it. I don't love that.
In this moment.
I don't either. It was my first reaction. But hey, I've got that here for everyone too, because I'm a baseball fan. Okay.
It's true.
But today we're not going to be talking about this year. We're going to be talking about next. Yeah. And I know I was supposed to put out my top 200 early. I think I do this every year where like I just need a little bit more time to really ensure that I have this right, because it's going to be what, 4 months now that I'm not going to officially put out any new rankings. So I wanted to get a little bit extra time to refine it, to make sure that I feel good about it. I feel pretty good. You also have put together a rough draft, because I think that's great. I wanted you to have something else to compare to, your initial thoughts. And I mean, we have the same top five. It's pretty great.
We do. You mentioned, hey, even if you don't really like dig into the weeds, just have like a general rough list.
And that's what I did. Fine over the next 4 months.
We chatted a little bit on the last podcast about some of like your groupings, your larger groupings. So I had a little sense of like where pieces might fit. I looked at some stats from this year. I looked at, obviously, like I had in the back of my head the articles I've written on the pitch mix changes and the improvements from certain pitchers. And I just put together a rough list and I slotted in some injured guys where I thought I might slot in some injured guys. And so, you know, we will compare our lists a little bit. I'll use my list and your list as we start talking about, like, you know, some of these, where some of these guys are ranked right now. But, you know, the listener can know that Nick did a lot more deep diving on his than I did.
Maybe. We'll see.
Possibly.
I mean, we are going to have a process that is very, I'm so lucky to have the community that we have. We got full lists of every single team, and free agents already there for me. Then I essentially just started to do buckets of player types and be able to just kind of go from there of like, okay, this is actually how I feel about this. And every single year I do refinements to the mentality, right? Yeah. I think you agree with this of just what kind of player do we want? Is it, really, should we be really going after those riskier high upside guys soon or not? How valuable is that Holly type, the one that's just dependable as the season goes on? Really understanding also the landscape of starting pitcher, which means that if there are very few guys that have ceiling potential, you actually need to, or really high ace ceiling potential, you need to chase that, because if you don't get those kind of ones, then you're going to probably lose because someone else is going to hit on it, and that's that. While in other seasons, there are so many of them that you don't feel as if you have to go after the few of them. It's actually nicer to go for stability, where they're going to be enough for you to chase after, and you probably will hit one of them. You'll be fine. So this is, like every other year, unique in its own way. And I want to ask you, Eric, is there something that about the pool this year of pitchers that stood out to you relative to other seasons?
Yeah, how big and how quick the quote unquote glob starts and is.
Everything is glob. The entire thing is a glob.
Yes. You know, I think in years past we've been like, hey, if I don't get one of these top five guys, like I'm just gonna wait.
Yeah.
I just felt like that glob of I'm just gonna wait started really early and lasted really long. And, you know, we'll chat about this later in some of our, some of the other podcasts that you get either here on the corner and on the larger Pitcher List network, but we're doing an early mock draft right now. And I think one of the things that we saw across the board was just how many people were like, fine. I don't need to take a starter right now for a long, long, long time. And we'll just see what's out there. And, you know, you will have podcasts. We'll get to discussing those drafts with people. But you'll see as we go through some of these arms that, like, you know, the difference between number 5 and number 20 might not really be as drastic as right. as it's been in years past.
Absolutely.
And there's an argument to be made for all of them. That stood out to me. We're going to go through this top 200, not pitcher by pitcher. I'm going to ask Nick some questions. We're going to talk through some of these guys. And then just so everybody knows, as the offseason continues, Nick and I are going to narrow the grouping, the list down into smaller groups. And we're going to do shorter podcasts where we look at yeah. these individual pitchers. So if we didn't get to a pitcher in this podcast, we will at some point in time talk about them.
We are really refining what we want to do in preparation of 2025. And the idea right now, which might change, is you're going to get two things here. You're going to get one, the Plus Pitch podcast, as you guys know, of me going over each individual team and having a podcast for that team specifically.
I loved that last offseason, by the way.
I appreciate that. Thank you. And if you guys also don't know, for PL Pro members, I give also a partner article to it that goes further in depth into each of these players and their prospects as well. But those blurbs I write for the teams, that's why it's early access, are actually the ones that are inside the top 400. So if you want to get a head start on all of this, become a PL Pro member. It's why I call it early access. I used to do this on my own and not share it. So that's why I feel okay hiding this one, because generally you guys know I do not paywall articles. This is stuff that becomes public later. So it's this is the only reason why I'm allowing this. I want to give something else to those that are our top supporters. This is the way I can do that. But I will be having those individualized podcasts. Generally, in the past, they've come out in all of January. It might come out sooner this year. I'm figuring that one out. But an idea that Eric and I had was to, instead of going through like 1 through 10, 11 through 20, that kind of thing, we will save that for the top 400 that comes out mm-hmm. in February. I don't know exactly how we're going to do that, because we obviously can't get through everything so fast. But what we're going to do over the next couple months is actually do maybe 5 or 10 and make these smaller episodes mm-hmm. that are really just talking about those guys specifically, and then stretch that out throughout the off season so that you guys have these direct podcasts to listen to, where you can then get the stuff that you want, the things you want to hear exactly, right? So we're excited for this. It's just a really fun way to really get both of our takes on these guys. And obviously, we have to talk about the guys at the top first. And there are going to be so many things that change as the offseason goes on. I mean, I was even commenting the other day that Gavin Stone is very likely to miss all of 2025. Right. So he's got to go. I actually haven't even updated inside of this quite yet. He needs to go from, I mean, I actually am very late. Gavin Stone, a 101. So there you go. I already had him outside the top 100, Eric.
Yeah. Now he's not going to not even have him, not even draft him.
Which is also really funny, by the way, because I had 202 initially, and I had a joke 201, and I realized I had to add one more guy, and now I can just put it in normal.
Now you got your joke 201 right back.
But this is what we're going to do here. And you're absolutely right, Eric. The pairings and the groups and the number of good pitchers is staggering. Mm-hmm. It is absolutely shocking, the quality throughout the top, I'd say 55. I mean, the fun ones, the ones that I generally would think I'd be like, I'm going to be aggressive on this one.
Right.
Is like 67 or something like that, you know? And I think I'm in a case where I don't actually want to draft any of them. I don't want to be stuck with any of those guys over in the beginning of the year. I'd rather not put my 12-team draft in this case of selling out and waiting for their start to see how this works out. I would rather just say, you know what? I'm going to go for opening weekend, and then fine, I'll drop that guy and get Jack Flaherty or Tanner Howell kind of thing instead, you know?
Got to have one fun one. Yeah, make sure there's one fun one.
The tier before has some fun ones.
Sure. Like, yes, it does.
Like, I would say the fun ones are like the Luis Heel and the Ryan Pepio, which are like, Nick, right. Come on, that's not really a fun one. It is, because I have Luis Heel at 49, you know?
Yeah.
And 49 is very, very late. You don't need to do that. So,
yes. we'll chat about that and some of these other guys, because there is a, I think that, you know, that some people will be shocked by that ranking. We'll dive into these real quick. Again, we're not going to go through each player ranked. Please make sure to check out the article to see all of the top 201. We're going to talk through some pockets and things that I found interesting when I was doing my rankings, or names that I'm surprised where Nick ranked them. We did, without chatting about this, I mean, we have, I guess, chatted about the pitcher landscape prior to this, but sure, you and I ranked the same exact top five, which was Tarek Skubal, Paul Skeen, Zach Wheeler, Corbin Burns, Garrett Crochet. I guess obviously we are in agreement there. They feel like the guys who we've seen the ceilings from, we've seen the consistency from, and with Crochet in particular, we should get the innings from now in this next season. Cross our fingers, maybe we get a trade as well, but even if we don't, those feel like the top five, obviously to you and I. I don't know if there's anything you feel like you need to add to those, but I just wanted to let everybody know who those names were as we're starting to get a sense of the board. Yeah.
I mean, really, it's when I think about just the top tier in this one, it's like, are you definitively someone that can that we trust to be either a 30% plus strikeout rate guy, or really, or is just so just there's this guy is just amazing. You expect every single time to be dope. I think Corbin Burns's change at the end of the year with the cutter is such a good indication. Now he is a free agent, and there is something to be said about that of, is this guy going to go to a place that is going to be good for him? I have to think that anyone that signs Burns is going to be paying for now as opposed to later. So I think that that's not going to change anything.
Yeah. And you might get some minor park factor things, right, moving from Baltimore. But when you have a pitcher like Corbin Burns, you're not really getting into the nitty gritty of like, oh, he's moving from Baltimore to, I don't know, like Yankee Stadium, which I don't think is going to happen. But just as a hypothetical, it doesn't really factor into like, oh, well, now I have to take Corbin Burns out of the top five, six, seven because the park is a little bit worse. Like, he's up there because of how good he is park, you know, in a vacuum, regardless of park.
Yeah, exactly.
The big one I want to chat with you about, I think some people might be, I know you've talked him up for months now, but Michael King at number six.
Yeah,
that might seem a little high to some people.
Yeah, so I get that because it's a 117 whip essentially this year, right, for Michael King. I see him as a Zach Wheeler. If there's one thing that I've certainly learned over the years is the ones that I've been able to say or really have come through more are the guys who are innings eaters who also have 25% plus strikeout rates, who have whiff stuff. The ones I'm thinking about are Zach Wheeler, Sandy Alcantara in those two breakout years. You have your George Kirby, your Logan Gilbert types. You have your even like Luis Castillo and Aaron Nola. These are ones that have just been so productive, really high floors for the most part. And we're going to talk about maybe George Kirby later or something along those lines. But with Michael King, what I think might throw people off is you see the 285, 117 whip and 20% K rate this season, that he had a really tough first month of the year. I remember actually going on a podcast and saying, Michael King sweeper has always been really good. It's not really good right now. This is going to change. And since May 4th, when he actually got settled in for the year, it was a 2.42 ERA, 1.12 whip, 29% K rate. 11 wins in 24 games and only got one win in April. This is a stud. This is just a set forget, six plus innings every game, high win chance on a Padres squad. You don't expect to be a lack of health. I think last year, entering this season, it was, okay, hold on. How many starts is he going to make? How healthy is he? He hasn't done this before. And I think a lot of the workload questions that we've had in the past that are, well, he only threw 104 innings or so last year. That was 2023, Michael King. He threw 170 this year. And if you tell me in any way that the Padres are going to limit him in 2025, I don't understand how you can reach that conclusion. So Michael King, set, forget, those kind of guys with that strikeout ability too. I'm such a fan of this. And looking at everyone else, yeah, I think that he is going in the right direction while everyone else is just trying to hold on to the floor that they've had. So to me, this is just absolutely dependable. And yeah, he's a stud.
Yeah, I had him at 11 right now. Excuse me. So we'll talk about some of the guys I had ahead of him. But I could certainly see, again, we've talked about the glob, right? I mean, I could see a case for him being up higher. I felt like 11 is a pretty good indicate, like a hat tip to how good he was, while also acknowledging the lack of long track record that some of the names above him may have had. But yeah, Michael King, certainly great. One of the names I had above him is somebody who maybe I'm just ignoring that he was mildly disappointing this season. But I have been for years a big Luis Castillo supporter in just the dependability of what you get from him. You mentioned we'd talk about Kirby as well. I mean, both Castillo and Kirby were featured in the top 10 for most people coming into this season.
Yeah.
You have Castillo down at 17 now and Kirby at 22.
Yes.
Obviously, they didn't live up to expectations this year, but they're still, we know that they're still very solid pitchers. Why such a drastic drop for both of those guys?
So with Kirby, I actually have been saying Michael King is, whatever you thought about George Kirby last year, you should be thinking about Michael King this year. That is the best way of just kind of framing that. And for George Kirby this year, I saw a guy who has a better slider, but really was not able to nail down an approach that worked. And you say, Nick, what are you talking about? He had a really good season. He was productive, George Kirby. Like, yes, but he wasn't the ace. He didn't really take that step into becoming this overwhelming guy. 23% K rate, but over 191 innings did mean that he had 179 strikeouts. That's great. But I'm not convinced that Kirby is going to take that next step. 3.53 ERA, 107 WHIP because of the low walk rate. The slider and fastball still are not being spotted as I think that they should to actually allow Kirby to become that overwhelming strikeout arm. And you're going to hear the number 22 and go, that's ridiculous. That's so low. But then you realize how stacked this season is with pitchers. I mean, there are so many that have higher potential when it comes to strikeouts. 80th percentile for George Kirby this year is phenomenal for total strikeouts. But I don't see him becoming a 95th unless he dramatically changes how he throws that slider, how he right. allows guys to get on base a little bit more. 3% walk rate means you're going to throw more strikes, which means you're going to see more swings in the zone on those zone rate pitches that he just does all the time. You have guys like Joe Ryan and his peer, Logan Gilbert, Pablo Lopez, Aaron Nola, Max Fried. Max Fried is the better version of George Kirby. You have Sandy Alcantara. I'm sorry, but Sandy Alcantara is a better pitcher to me than George Kirby. And the whole idea of, it's another theme you'll see, is guys coming back from Tommy John, I am not going to give them the injury ding that others are. Yes. Because you see that everyone gets injured. Everyone does. And here's a guy who has a repaired elbow.
Right. There's a particular name we'll chat about later on that love how you ranked him. I agree with you on Kirby. I mean, I have Kirby. Yeah. I mean, I have Kirby slightly higher than you, but I have him at 16 and I'll probably move him to at least 17 because there's a pitcher coming back from Tommy John who I have right below Kirby, who I've always been incredibly high on, and now I see how high you have that person ranked, and I might just give in to my own desire to rank this guy much higher. So, like, you have Kirby 22, I have him 17. I think we both dropped him a bunch. Am I foolish for continuing to believe that, like, Luis Castillo, we just kind of know what we're going to get from him, and it may not be electric, but it's going to be pretty darn good, and it's not a bad, like, low-end fantasy ace?
Well, right. I mean, I think of him and Aaron Nola pretty similarly, with Castillo likely going to raise that 24% strikeout rate again. But the way I see it is that Castillo, it really isn't the greatest command pitcher. A lot of times this year, I saw games where he just couldn't spin it right or locate his fastball correctly. And even watching how he pitches doesn't quite speak to that confidence of location and executing exactly what he wants all the time. But it's just overwhelmingly good. His hit per nine did go up to 8 for the first time since 2021 for some of the Mariners. Hopefully that comes down. But I just generally think of this as, 13% swing strike rate, not the 16% we saw last year from Luis Castillo. It's possible that comes back and it's a good floor. But I do need to recognize that, yeah, his ceiling is not really a sub three ERA, sub 110 whip.
Sure.
I think the idea of a 30% plus K rate is not there. He's never, or he only achieved that in this very short 2020 season. Luis Castillo is great and productive, but he's not a top five potential. And if you're not a top five potential, then I need to push you closer down to this other tier.
I like that. I mean, I'm moving him down in my rankings as we speak because I fully support that logic, right? If we are talking about this kind of glob of guys, and you are firmly and pretty securely in the middle of that, but you might not have the upside to be the top of that, then maybe if you fall, I'm happy to take you. But I shouldn't take you above the guys who I think are going to go higher. So I support that rationale. We're going to talk about that injured starting pitcher coming off of the IL back in 2025, who you have in the top 10. But we're going to do that after this break. So I have always been, as you referred to it, a McClanahan fan. Always
like
been
picking my giant 20-ounce mug that says McClanahan fan.
Always been a huge Shane McClanahan fan. I went conservatively and ranked him 17th. He was the one I mentioned was right after George Kirby, coming off the IL. He's never had a huge innings total, even when before the injury, he's never been like 170, 180 innings, you know, type of guy. But I think maybe we're leaning into this idea that like if I'm getting 150 elite innings from Shane McClanahan, that's worth being in the top 10, and you have him 8th. So why do you feel good about McClanahan back inside the top 10?
Yeah. What we've seen I think it really showcased this year the rebirth of the lefty changeup, the real embrace of it. Mm-hmm. And Cole Reagans and Tarek Skubal leading the charge of this, showcasing that if you're a lefty, it's not a slider game, it's a changeup game. And if you remember, Shane McClanahan's changeup is filth. 24% swing strike rate in 2022, 29% in 2023 is just bonkers. And what I see is you are a healthy Shane McClanahan. The Rays, honestly, they're going to throw him out there every 5 days like normal. I don't really see why we shouldn't expect Shane McClanahan to be dope again. All expectations, spring training next year, I was reading about it. They were hoping maybe even like by the end of this year, not going to happen. Fine. But I ensure that's like, am I getting ahead of myself? Is it really clear? Like, no, yes. Opening day, normal offseason, all that stuff. Great. And yeah, I mean, I'm talking about elite upside potential, right? That's really the thing that we should be leaning in on. 2022 was a 30% K rate from McClanahan, sub one whip. It was all there, all put together. He's phenomenal. And obviously he had those issues in 2023 that led to Tommy John. Fine, healthy return. This is the kind of guy you go for. I also have in that mini tier, I mean, it's like my mini injury tier. And I do recognize that Alcantara is a step behind. Alcantara is more of that Wheeler type of not being a 30% strikeout rate, but more at volume. And I do give him a small ding for being on the Marlins a bit. I do give him a smaller ding about a little bit of consistency of stuff, being a right-hander and not having that absurd slider. Sure. Does hurt him a little bit. But because he is doing the Wheeler method of four-seamer sinker, two fastballs in the zone that you don't really know which way they're going to go. And then you have the changeup for lefties. Love it. It's just a little bit more chaotic, I think, with Alcantara at times. And that does mean that he's more of that Max Fried type and a better version of your Webb in Valdez, but not really as strong as that top five. Like, I don't expect the 220 inning season again that really elevated him in 2022 for Sandy Alcantara. So McClanahan being that 30% strikeout potential guy has that potential. And you have DeGrom, Ohtani, and McClanahan in this sub tier of inside my real top tier, essentially, because those are the aces. Those are the guys that are really like that top five that stop that crochet of being a 30% strikeout rate plus. However, they have more of a ding of not pitching this last year. And of course, there's DeGrom, who I'm still going to say, like, there are arguments to be made that he should be SP1. I understand why you're not going to do it.
But you have him 7. I have him 6. So I think we're both.
Okay, I was really tempted to put him 6, but I'm just like, Michael King is just so good for the full year. Yeah. Like, I don't know. I can't not do it. But I had a lot of temptations to do it. I have temptations to put King underneath this little mini tier too. But it's just these are the injured guys. And what happens every single year when we do these rankings is we put them lower because they're injured. Question mm-hmm. marks happen. And sometimes, yes, we do get spring training stuff that says they're not back on schedule. You see like Musgrove, where I was like, he's going to be fine. And then he was delayed and it didn't really right. happen. Absolutely, it does happen, sure. But then again, you also get random guys like Garrett Cole, who was steady and sturdy, and he got injured. Like, it's not really that they are injured necessarily that they do. It's just because they're a pitcher. Yeah. So I'm gonna put them more aggressively than others.
I'm going to jump in and just ask you about Cole, because you did just throw that name out. I mean, we know why Strider, who was the number one, is now out of the top 10, because obviously he'll be coming back off of an injury.
He's going to be coming back later. I think this is a thing, too, is I have this category called IL Stud, which is just really Strider and Glasnow. And Glasnow is not necessarily TGAS, but we have no idea when he returns.
Exactly.
Like, really don't know. And Strider should be about June. So it's like at the moment of indecision of just.
And Cole was the.
Yeah.
Cole was like the clear SP2 for most people coming into this year. He ended the season healthy. I mean, he is currently still pitching, so I don't want to jinx that, but he ended the regular season healthy. And you have him at 11.
Yeah.
Is this for you? What we saw in 2024 might not have just been him dealing with injuries, but him kind of beginning maybe a little bit of a decline in production.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think that Cole is bad because he's at 11. Right. And I don't know if I'm going to put Yoshinobu Yamamoto at 10. I think that I don't know where I'm decided on him quite yet. I see him as a healthy, ready to go now for a full workload of a season. I might be putting Yamamoto down closer to 18, 19 by the time I actually publish this one. I think that
I
was
have Yamamoto at 7.
At 7. Okay,
which
cool.
is potentially optimistic. But you know, I mean, I'm hoping for a little bit more leash in his second MLB season than some of these like quick hooks. And you know, I'm hoping for a little more of like a steadying presence as he adjusts to baseball. And I think we saw the flashes of upside. I have Yamamoto 7 and Cole 8. So we both have them back to back. I just have them a little higher in the back to back.
Sure. I think I have a theory about just Japanese pitchers in general. Just first year, they push it more and they're not used to it. And then the second year is when the injury happened, but that's like not founded on anything. I'm just being stupid. That's kind of why I have Imanaga at 24 a bit. And also I think Imanaga from what he does is not as sustainable as others, but I could be too low on Imanaga. I might be pushing him into that tier above Holly, and I'll get more into that in a moment about my redefinitions of terms, because I was really, I think I blended them too much this past year, and I have a good solution now. But going back to Cole's slider was not there. And really when I think about Garrett Cole, it's like you have an overpowering four-seamer and an overpowering slider. And that slider just has not been that pitch for him for a bit. I was really waiting for it to be returning to form. And you want to say, oh, it's all sticky stuff. No, he actually had it post-sticky stuff. But it just wasn't there the second half at all. He would go back and forth with it. He would get through starts like a Fried type. And I keep going back to Fried type. I'm thinking like, you're not necessarily blowing guys away with a 9 strikeout game or something. It's more like 6 or 7, but it's a good 6 inning plus with production, right? It's good. And you believe it every time with on a winning team. But it's not the Garrett Cole that just completely overwhelms. It's not debilitating. He has to finesse more. And you throw in the fact that it was this injury that it kind of felt like he was still injured a bit. And
a little
figuring
bit.
It out.
A little bit.
And I think there is a little bit more of a question mark of, does he really have 200 innings in him still?
Sure.
So I know that's not really fair because everyone gets injured and stuff. And I thought, okay, fine. I'm not really going to ding him for that, because having him at 11 or 10 is saying, no, I think you're just going to be healthy throughout the year. And the quality we saw this year is good and it could be slightly better, but he's not top 5 anymore. He's not, you watch Garrett Crochet and that guy is just overwhelming. Yeah. And Garrett Cole is not that.
Yeah. I like that rationale. Just one more injured guy and then we'll move to a different topic of conversation, but you've got injured guys like McClanahan who are coming off surgery. You've got injured guys like Kodai Senga, who's currently pitching. Obviously, the first start in the NLCS did not go particularly well for him. But he had an injury, an arm injury, did not get surgery. You have him at 30th right now. I have him at 42nd. I'm possibly overly worried that because he got hurt and didn't have anything surgically repaired, that there's still just like an injury lurking in there. How did you rationalize ranking some of these injured guys who did not have surgery and your comfort level and where to put them?
Yeah, I don't know. I think being injury doctor is the hardest thing that we do. And predicting volume is the hardest thing that we do. And if they're pitching healthy now for the most part, then like, okay. Like Max Fried, he had a forearm strain and it kind of came back a little bit. And like a lot of things about, is he fine? I think he's fine. Mm-hmm. But it's impossible. I'm just telling you right now, it's impossible. The guys that you are going to say all of season long, like, oh yeah, this guy can depend on for this amount of innings and this volume. Who knows? Like, I hope so. That was Gerrit Cole entering last year. That was, they thought they were babying Yuri Perez and we're going to be fine with that. And that did not happen, right? You just don't know. And that applies to George Kirby. That applies to Logan Gilbert. That applies even to Zach Wheeler. So in Corbin Burnes, like all of these guys. So you just can't go down those woods and just go for like, all right, do I think I'm going to get quality when I get it? And yes, they're going to be like the Glasnows who are always going to find a way. And I feel like that needs to be hurt more. That's why DeGrom mm-hmm. isn't one. But yeah, for the most part, I can't really lean in too much into that. I mean, like I do give it to Brian Wu, by the way, a little bit. Like Brian Wu, that man is fragile. I think I would have Brian Wu at 10 if I believe that he's on the same like innings pace as George Kirby. Because what he does, four seamer, he is a Zach Wheeler type. Like mm-hmm. he is kind of Zach Wheeler to me. Of four seamer and sinker that are both really good over the plate, but like moves different directions, good command with it. And then a bevy of secondaries that help, but are not overwhelming, that are not like the go-tos. It's his four-seamer and his sinker. And Brian Wu is that. It's just you are not trained or conditioned quite yet. And keep in mind, it did take Wheeler a while to get conditioned. He was the perennial injured guy.
Right.
And now all of a sudden he's not. So, yeah, it's hard to do. Good luck, everyone.
Good luck. Good luck to all of you. I want to talk about one more like of these, like I guess, pseudo top tier arms, and then we'll move to some of the guys in the middle. Coming into the 2024 season, there was this narrative that we talked about a lot of like this quote unquote safe aces, right? Mm-hmm. The guys who were going to give us innings and the guys who were going to give us like a baseline of solid ratios and consistent production. And if you didn't want to chase the injured guys, you could chase the George Kirbys.
Yep.
Who we already addressed. And the other two big names in that group were Zach Gallen and Logan Webb, who were all guys who were ranked kind of in the top 12, 14, 15, whatever for people in 2024. You have Gallen 25th right now. You have Logan Webb 35th. So is this a little bit of a ding to the idea of the quote unquote safe volume ace? And now we just put these guys in a tier of what is their actual talent warrant. And that includes maybe not some less exciting swing and miss, right? Maybe the ratios are not as stable as we want to anticipate they would be, et cetera.
Sure. I think that last bit is right. Consistency is very hard. And when it comes to lack of swing and miss, I mean, you have 10% from Logan Webb. It generally does mean that there's less margin for error. And he struggled a bit. He was trying to find what is his third pitch. There were many games where he didn't throw his changeup 60 times or so, right? Mm-hmm. It was very weird. I'm like, no, why aren't you doing that? That's the best thing. And for Logan Webb, the guy that was of stability and everything, yeah, he got 13 wins. I mean, that is good. It was 88th percentile. You got that volume, but you got volume. 204 innings of a 123 whip. And I know that doesn't, that sounds like, oh, 15 team, that's really good or so. If you're in a 12 teamer, that was a negative ding for you. That actually made it harder for you to win whip because you had such a high volume of average whip, if not worse. If you look at your roto leagues, like I want to say the winners of whip or so was like 113 or something like that. Like it was, I don't have the exact numbers in front of me, but I can guarantee you that the tops of it weren't 123, which brought you down in those categories, right? And you're fighting for better of it. And yes, he did give you those strikeouts that you needed, and 347 ERA, good, fine, we'll take that. Okay. But I guess what I'm getting at with Webb, you're not going to get the stud that you want. The concept I had going into it was like, all right, you know what? You had 194 strikeouts, even though it's not, you know, the strikeout rate isn't high, is because of the volume, you're going to get that back. 172 was 86th percentile, yes. It's also, it's not really the overwhelming push that sure takes him over the edge. And it's not the safety. Safety is, I think, an illusion a bit, because how safe is this really? You don't know what you're going to get. You don't know if he's going to get a necessarily productive win. 13 wins is 88th percentile, but like it could have been 12. You know, it's not, a win is such a weird amount. He put himself in a position to just generally get double digits or more. Yes, but it's not, it's not a fact that all of a sudden Logan Webb is going to give you all of this, and there's a chance that he hurts you with it. The chance of a real high impact top five, top 10 is not necessarily there. So I'm more on the side of, hey, there are all of these other ones that I think are going to be above average in everything, or be that big push of the needle. And I'm also very much of the theory of, if you're not first, you're last when it comes to fantasy baseball. I'm sorry, I don't care about second place or third place. And that doesn't mean that you should just go full upside or so. What it does mean to me, though, is you need to put yourself in positions where you can get lucky. Luck isn't about just getting lucky. It's about putting yourself in giving yourself the opportunity to be lucky. And if you settle for your Framber Valdez and your Logan Webbs, I mean, that's fine. You got lucky, by the way, that Framber Valdez absolutely saved his season out of nowhere. I mean, he just found his curveball in the last 2 months, and it was just astronomically good. I wish I had it right in front of me. I can probably get it soon enough. But like, those first and second halves were unbelievably different, and I have no idea what you're going to get. And with Zach Gallen, watching him pitch, this is a guy kind of lost for a lot of the year. He had a 126 whip. That really hurt. This year, if you had Zach Gallen, there were many times you didn't know what to do with Gallen. I didn't know where to rank him a ton. And I think I saw a guy that just was like, wait, how do I use my four seamer now? Swing strike rate went down to 5% for him on the pitch. It was not fun. His ICR, and it was 47%. Guys were crushing this thing.
We talked at the beginning of the year about how, like, he in particular really relied on his pitches playing off one another for success, and that he kept everything low in the zone more than others in terms of, like, especially the fastball location, because he needed it to work with the other pitches in his arsenal in order to get that deception that he couldn't blow high fastballs by people, that it needed to stay low because he needed to set up the secondary pitches that fell out of the zone low. And that's a tough tightrope to walk. And again, that's not, you know, you go back to it. I have Gallen 30th. And I think you just go back to it and you're like, what is the ultimate upside of that pitcher? And I just, you know, I think we were ranking Gallen in the top 15 last year or this year for this perceived security, not because we were like, Zach Gallen's upside is a top 10 pitcher. It was just like, I'm not going to get burned by Zach Gallen in the same way I might get burned by Tyler Glass now. And I understand that thought process, but that doesn't make Zach Gallen a starting pitcher to draft before you draft Tyler Glass now. Obviously, I'm talking about this year, not Tyler Glass now coming.
Right, yeah, yeah, right, right.
But like, you know, you look at some of the names ahead of him, like, you know, Grayson Rodriguez or Brian Wu, as you mentioned before. Like, yeah, Zach Gallen is probably safer than Brian Wu in the sense that, like, we have a track record to suggest that Brian Wu is not injury prone, but gets injured.
Yeah, he's fragile. This is just that he's fragile. Yeah.
But Zach Gallen, I wouldn't take Zach Gallen over Brian Wu because I don't believe that Zach Gallen is a better pitcher for fantasy baseball than Brian Wu.
Right. Right. It's difficult to figure out exactly where to place guys like Gallen and Valdez and Webb. And I might be actually lowering Gallen. I like, this is so easy to do all this stuff. And I want to clarify the whole labeling and really the mindset that I get into with this. And I want to talk about all of that after this break. This year, I wanted to change kind of the labels. I have Holly. I have Ace is Gonna Ace. I have Holly. I have Toby. I have Cherry Bomb. And I kind of realized this. Hollies are kind of your studs that you really don't think about the entire year of dropping. Like, they're just there. They're on your team. And there have been times that I had certain pitchers on the team that we certainly dropped as the year went on, but they were performing like that six inning, 25% strike every guy. And I realized I was trying to identify what a Holly is and a Toby is and a Cherry Bomb by numbers exactly. And I shouldn't. I should really do it about just the trust that we put into guys and their sort of general expectations. So what I've done this year is I've taken Cherry Bomb and removed it from the flyer on the waiver wire to actually being a premium pitcher with volatility, and then made a Toby a combination of volatility and stability, but on the lower end, where during your fantasy season, you're wondering if it's worthwhile for you to actually hold on to this guy. That is what a Toby really is. Someone who's the last player on your team, on your rotation, that you're wondering, should I be dropping this guy or not? Not necessarily their upside potential, which I have been clarifying it as in the past, because it's like this bland, like, I'm Toby kind of thing. Sorry, Batflip Crazy. That's not you. I'm just doing the character from The Office. You're amazing. I should just make you, I should just call you the Batflip instead of Holly, as the best version of Toby. But Cherry Bomb is really this tier that I've made of, on a given night, they could just be like the greatest ace ever, or they can just be like a volatile five and run, six and run guy, right? And that's your Dylan Cease. That's your Grayson Rodriguez. Your Kodai Senga, your Blake Snell, your Jared Jones.
That's your one other pitcher.
Spencer Schwellenbach.
Spencer Schwellenbach. I did want to I did want you to reference him. You're talking about Cherry Bomb. So let's talk about why Spencer Schwellenbach for you fits in with this tier of guys.
So it's about, I do want to mention again, it's not necessarily about numbers exactly. Yes, it is higher strikeout rate potential to become Ace is Gonna Ace. Well, the Holly type, I have like Kirby and Wu and Imanaga and Gallen and Framber Valdez in the first one, and I might change this slightly. But then like the next one after is like Sonny Gray and Justin Steele and Logan Webb and Carlos Rodon and Jeffrey Springs. And those are ones that really aren't aces to me. They aren't like, hey, look, this guy is going to be like a 25-30% strikeout rate with a 3 ERA, 110 whip. Like, we know every single time it's going to be out there. We know that Rodon goes through some things. We know that Logan Webb makes you upset. Justin Steele, I'm not quite banking on him being a stud every single night and deserving it, right? Sonny Gray goes through rhythms and everything like that too. But in the end, you're never really questioning if this is going to be damaging to your team, in my view at least. With the Cherry Bombs, like, we have seen that down season from Cease. Kodai Senga, it was really rough for a while and then he stabilized it. Blake Snell pulls your hair out for half a season and it comes back, but then like, can we actually bank on that happening in the second half? I don't know. And Jared Jones, of course, we saw that his lack of command and consistency really ruined him when he came back from injury. So Spencer Schwellenbach is inside of this, because his four-seamer is not overpowering. It is not a good movement profile for it, but it is at 96, and it does work into the rest of the arsenal. And he could be, it could go either way when it comes to, are you going to develop into an ace, right, or are you going to develop into someone that is very unreliable? And he might actually turn into just settle in like your Sonny Gray type. And that might be fine. And it might just be a Holly, not a Cherry Bomb. We know what we're going to get kind of thing. But because he's young,
yes,
I think that I need to put him into this.
That's the component I think is important is like you have to, and this is where it will differ for everybody. And this is, you know, you and I chatted before this, and I'm sure we'll have a conversation more in depth about this in the off season about like, you know, projections and using projections when you're dealing with pitching.
Yeah.
But like, this is why it will always differ per person, right? Because you are talking about the growth and development of a player. And in particular with pitchers, right? Because pitchers have a skill set in which they are able to say, these are the tools at my disposal. And I am able to change these tools every year. And by that, I mean like their pitch mix, their arsenal, right? I am able to improve, adapt, modify this pitch mix every year. As a hitter, I couldn't do that. All I could do was say, hey, I'm getting beat a lot on outside pitches. I'm either going to try and change my stance or I'm going to work a lot on hitting outside pitches in the offseason to make sure I have plate coverage. And I guess you could make an argument that is like me adding a skill, but it's not the same as a pitcher saying, hey, I don't get a lot of strikeouts. I am now throwing a sweeper. Like I am literally just adding a new thing that I do. And hitters can't be like, I'm now adding home runs. Okay. How are you adding home runs? Like, what are you doing that is adding home runs? Right. That's like the Yandy Diaz. Oh, he's going to lift it. Okay. Is he for 3 weeks of the season? And then he's not anymore. Right. And so that is something where you have to be like, in what is your comfort level of saying, this is a 22-year-old, this is a 24-year-old, this is a guy in his first major league season, this is, you know, whatever. And I am banking on a level of growth that suggests this is what I saw this year. This is what the 3-year rolling average is or whatever that projections use. But I'm banking on the growth of a young pitcher adding something that they have flashed and adding something more consistently to what they do, to their tool chest, to their skills. And part of that is always going to be subjective. It's always going to be, what do you personally think? And for you, you have Spencer Schwellen. I mean, I have him 38, you have him 29. We're not super far apart. But I think both of those rankings suggest hey, what we saw this year isn't necessarily what we're just going to see copy and paste 2024. Yeah, like there is a potential for growth.
I mean, it's oh my gosh. So this is kind of why I'm going really into those labels, because I mean, I have those labels from between Holly and Cherry Bomb all the way from 22 to 55, you know? And I say this every year, you have to get a rotation that includes guys that, you know, you're just going to start every day and not think about it. And then after that, you generally want 4 of them. Some seasons it's 3, some seasons it's 5. This actually might be a 5, really. And it's actually how I'm affecting my rankings is because there are so many, it even puts more emphasis on getting going after the right pitchers at the end of your draft that you either get value with early on based on their schedule, or you are going to quickly drop after their first start. Mm-hmm. I'm going to say this endlessly. Yes, I was wrong on DL Hall and AJ Puck. 100%.
Me too.
Right? We were wrong on them. Also, I dropped them both got Flaherty and Houck, right? And like that is the mentality. And in another league, it was that turned into me getting Michael King when he was dropped on after the rocky start. That was the open spot I had. Or I led with Martin Perez for a month to figure that one out, right? You have to understand that in this 12-teamer, there's a limit of guys that's just like, okay, cool. I have Ryan Pepiot at 47. I love Ryan Pepiot. I also understand that it might be 3 weeks of pain, you know, out of this gate, and it might be a little bit tough, but I generally think he's going to come through. And even guys that I actually think are going to be really good this year, like Ryan Nelson, I have to put him at 62 because it's just, I don't know if he's really going to take that step forward with this four seamer or really anything else in his arsenal and be able to build on this. I love chasing Bobby Miller. He's the perfect first upside flyer. because we'll know from start one, maybe even spring training, if this is actually a new Bobby Miller or not. And if it isn't, I'm gone. I'm out. I have Jackson Jobe, Andrew Painter, and Noah Schultz in here as like three guys that I really hope are going to be fighting for the rotation out of the game. And if they do, go and get them. That was our Jared Jones this year. That was our Luis Gil this year. Those worked. And those are around the same places. And in many leagues, you were able to go from AJ Puck, DL Hall to them. So this is why I have it ranked this way, that the cherry bomb types are no longer those upside flyers. That's the term I'm giving for them. Maybe I'm just going to call them all Spice Girls at this point. That's like the wannabe aces that you want to be circling and paying attention to early in the year. But Hollies and cherry bombs are like, Hollies are the ones that you are feeling safer with that are going to be fine. You're going to have them on your team. You won't see them on the waiver wire in all likelihood. And then the cherry bombs are the ones that have potential for more and being inside that top, you know, that hinting at ace is going to ace. But keep in mind, you might drop some of these.
Right.
And probably not like the top tier one of them, but like you might drop Yusei Kikuchi. He might not be able to have his four seamer and his slider working. You know, it was a little tumultuous this year, the start of it. I don't quite know. Those are the decisions you have to make for yourself.
Yeah, your Holly tier is not big enough, but I was looking up how to differentiate between the Hollies you were talking about, because I remembered in the episode of The Office, you could call them Hollies and Helens. I think it was Helen, not Helene, but like Michael Scott dates Pam's mom, and then he finds out that Pam's mom is older than he thought, and so he dumps her. So you can have the Hollies and the Helens. It's like the young Hollies and the older ones are the Helens. And then you can have the ones that are like Hollies, but they're just a little bit older.
Right. So like I have it like 51. Seth Lugo season, I don't buy into. I don't buy into this happening. We fall into this trap before. It could be great, fine, but like he's not going to have this peak of a season. Eovaldi, don't know what we're going to see. Zach Eflin, he's fine, but like we know that there's something weird about him. Ronel Blanco had a great changeup earlier on. He lost it. I don't think he's going to be able to repeat it. And Yu Darvish is going to continue to just be a mystery of what we're going to get from him.
And let's talk about cherry bombs that you don't buy also. I mean, we've talked about the cherry bomb as a tier. There are three guys that I think their rankings will surprise some people based on how good their 2024s were. It's Hunter Green at 39. Luis Gil at 40 and Jack Flaherty at 50.
I want to say it's 49 for Luis Gil. That's an error inside of our thing. It's weird right now. Yeah. Don't worry about it. But yeah, Luis Gil's at 49, Hunter Green 39, and Jack Flaherty at 50.
So I'm curious maybe why you're not as optimistic about what they did in 2024.
Yeah, right. I really struggled. I mean, this is the hardest tier, I think, for me. Because I can see every reason why all of these become aces, right? And I do think that, like, Grayson Rodriguez, I initially had in the top 25, but let's be honest, like, he actually struggled a ton more. And I was late moving him down my ranks. I think there is so much potential with Grayson Rodriguez. He still needs to figure out consistency. It's really a problem, actually, at this point of, are you consistently locating and executing the pitch you want to throw? I'm very excited to see his development. He could very well turn into a top five pitcher if he could turn into a six inning plus guy. But the control is really the big thing, and control less so of command. Honestly, just throw enough strikes with these in good places, and that's good. But the this tier you're talking about is specifically Hunter Green. He's always going to get a small ding because it's Cincinnati. He should allow more home runs than he allowed this past year. Mm-hmm. He's still really a two pitch pitcher with four seamers and sliders. The four seamer got better. The IVB increased on it. That said, he did flip-flop a little with it. It did decrease as the season went on. And the slider, really in general, the slider was not the savior that it needed to be a lot. He did have a very good beginning of the year, I think more so based on the four-seamer avoiding the heart of the plate like he used to. That said, I see the other guys. I see Jerry Jones, and I see a better version of Hunter Green. I think Jared Jones, when he came back from injury, wasn't quite himself and he didn't really get into a rhythm. I think you give a full season of Jared Jones in a better park too, you're going to have a better version of Hunter Green, essentially, from Jared Jones. I Hunter Green at 39, it's like, yeah, that seems very low. Sonny Gray, Justin Steele, Logan Webb, Carlos Rodon, Jeffrey Springs are above it. And it's like, well, yeah, I might honestly be putting Carlos Rodon and Jeffrey Springs lower because I think they do have more inconsistency and less of a track record than the others. That said, it's, I don't know. I think Rodon is really good and pitches in such a good situation. Jeffrey Springs' changeup is absurdly good. You know, despite all my thoughts about him, the person, he's really good at what he does. So those are the main reasons there. Luis Gil can't command. He's not consistent. He's not consistent what he tries to do. Some days the changeup shows up, it doesn't. Some days the slider is there, sometimes it isn't. Maybe that gets better, but I'm very much going to be hesitant on banking on command increasing with the guys. And there's a difference between those who are, like, for example, George Kirby. He had like a 56% strike rate on his slider or something like that. And it was just too far out of the zone, but it was consistent. It was a circle out of it. And I was like, oh, you are precise, just in the wrong place, right? Precision being repetition, accuracy being where you want to go. So that seems fixable. Luis Gil is more volatile. And with Jack Flaherty is weird because that fastball should not have been performing as well as it did. And his slider and curve were absurdly accurate for such a long time. And if you look at Jack Flaherty after going to the Dodgers in August and September, you will see that his slider was not the same pitch. It was not as consistent for him. And he actually struggled. It wasn't pristine for Jack Flaherty in that time. I heavily question one half season of Flaherty. We have seen halves and moments from him in rhythm in the past. And especially for a guy that signed a one-year deal, had to prove himself, did it. I am not going to buy in on him repeating exactly this again, especially when you have really fun ones like Gavin Williams, I think, getting better. Tanner Bibee, who is constantly just a shrug for me of doing what he wants to do, but like, it works. Yeah. Bryce Miller, who we all love and want to work, but you can see that next step coming forward for him. So I can do that with all these guys. And there's a case that all of them belong in the top 35, if not top 30, but you got to put them somewhere. And Flaherty to me is, I think, the easiest sell of not going to repeat this.
I get that. That all makes sense to me. I want to end with another pocket that we didn't yet chat about, which is the Tobys. You mentioned obviously what the Toby is, but there is a name in here that might surprise people falling all the way to the Toby range. It is your 75th ranked starting pitcher. Nah. Kevin Gausman.
Yeah, I know. I mean, all of these are really shocking, I think. Like, Clark Schmidt is going to be good. Reese Olson, we like Reese Olson, but also is he really going to actually like take over? You know, you're going to feel fine with it. And the thing is, like, all of these are like your last pick. Like, if you have Christopher Sanchez on your team, he's got like a 380 ERA and a 120 whip and like a 20% K rate. You're like, maybe I should be chasing Kumar Rocker if he's looking hot out of the gate. You know, he's going to be the guy you're going to be thinking you're ready to drop. And it just shows how deep pitching is. It's nuts.
I think it'd be a shock for some people that Gausman falls in that range, even though the full season was not great. We understand that. It wasn't like a small blip. Like, it was a full season, but people are so used to seeing him ranked near the top. And I guess also he doesn't have a long track record as like a top 15 fantasy starter. It was like a small peak and maybe we've now hit the valley.
Well, here's the thing. You have three seasons now of Gausman in Toronto and you see a 124 whip, 118 whip, 122 whip. You see hit rates at 8+. Last two seasons have been around 8/9, 10, of course, in that ridiculous 2022 season with the 364 BABIP and such, sure. But what we saw last year was the splitter getting way worse. And this is actually why you see the BABIP go down, is because those splitters that used to be whiffs are now going into play. And yes, those do generate outs, but it means that to match a hit per nine that is worthwhile, you're going to lose strikeouts in that cost. And it really ended up with a 122 whip and a 3.83 ERA with a 21% K rate. How is that not a Toby? Yeah. That is very much borderline of, hey, is this worth my time? You're going to see 14 wins. And this is also a thing of 15 team bias that seeps in at times during my rankings, and I got to get rid of it. I'm trying to, that those that go win hunting are not going to be happy in 12 teamers, because wins, look, you can stream wins if you really honestly need to go win hunting, but they just don't stream the White Sox or so. On a given night, I even set up a formula for like generic projections of any pitcher. Sure. Of just saying this is a winning team at 60% winning chance, and they're in the game for a third, 2/3 of the game at six innings, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. They make 30 starts. Essentially means that you get 12 wins, right? And you see 14 wins from Gosman, like, oh, you know, 91st percentile. Like, he had 12 wins the past two seasons. You know, it's really tough to discern it. You're also going to see player raters that are going to favor a lot of these Toby types. Because this just happens to be the season they got 14 or 15 wins.
Right.
Right. And I hate that. And I get why the difference between 10 wins versus 15 wins is a 50% increase in that value. Right.
You're talking you're talking about 2023 Zach Eflin, too.
Yeah, sure. What do you have, like 20 wins or something like that?
I think it's like, 19 or 20 wins.
Right. And you're going to see that. You're going to see it from Seth Lugo, I'm sure, too. You're going to see, like, oh, he was this in the player rater or whatever. And, you know, it's really funny. Also, people were talking about Ranger Suarez as X, Y, and Z. And I had him like 50th during his ace dumb or something. Everyone goes, what? This is crazy. And it's like, well, because this is what they do, is they have these moments in a season from the end of the year. And we're going to be like, oh, yeah, right. We get this. But in the moment, it's not going to be easy. So long story short, Kevin Gausman is not the pitcher that he once was. The splitter is gone. It did come back for a moment at the end of the year. If you want to bank on that splitter returning, fine. But then you look at 22 and 23 and you just got to recognize this is not a 108 whip guy. This is a 115 whip at best is what you should be hoping for. Maybe the strikeouts do return too. It's just not, it's not really pulling me toward the front. It's pulling me more toward the back, where you wonder, should I really be holding on to this? And I think in all likelihood, as a guy who's going to be entering his 34-year-old season, on the decline, it just makes all the sense that this is going to get worse before it gets better. So I'm out on Kevin Gausman. I think he's too much of a headache.
Well, our podcasts are going to get better before they get worse, because we have so many off-season podcasts coming up where we're going to deep dive into far more of these pitchers. But I thought this is an interesting look at the top 200 and some of the, you know, just the pockets within there that are of note to some people.
I have one more question for you.
Ooh, okay.
The fun part of these are always like, who are the late around 100 arms, right? And I actually haven't really checked it on yours. I just want to give you a moment on your own to tell. I have
around,
this list
around 100.
Yeah, just like the after this Toby tier, I've got my IL stud tier, which is like Lucas Giolito and Yuri Perez and Shane Bieber and Brandon Woodruff and Kyle Bradsh and Christian Javier. This is your equivalent of like stashing Robbie Ray this year, or like Jeffrey Strings or something like that, right? And after that is where I say, okay, here's my fun stuff that, like, if they show up in spring training and just look amazing and everything, we might be pushing further. These are like the fun names that we might be adding like at the end of April or something, like they're breaking out. For me, I have Grant Holmes in this if he gets an opportunity. You have Drew Rasmussen, because we don't know. He literally doesn't know if the Rays are making him a starter or reliever. At least he didn't like a couple of weeks ago. And then you have Nick Lodolo, because I don't, it's so crazy for me to put Lodolo here, but it's just, I don't trust it. Sean Burke that I've talked about, David Festa, Caleb Killian, Jack Leiter, even Joey Cantillo in here, right? Go ahead.
Just some of my names.
Okay.
I was going to say David Festa. I have AJ Smith-Shawver right by David Festa. I also was going to, I mean, I have Joey Cantillo and Grant Holmes later, 99 and 100. Caleb Killian at 103 for me. We get kind of like random at the end numbers wise, but he was a guy we really liked in the spring. DJ Hers, who, you know, command issues,
I have him like 127, because it's just, I don't have any faith in I'm leaning more shouldn't. Into am I seeing something that I feel like, okay, cool, I can depend on you, right? And I don't feel like I'm going to get there with Hers. It's kind of why Lodolo is as low as he is, right? Sorry, I interrupted you.
You didn't. It was conversation. I think you also have your Jackson Jobe for like, am I going to get 2024 Paul Skeens, where like he comes up in June and
he's that
like
late dominant. On Jobe for you.
I have Jobe. No, I have Jobe. I have Jobe, Festa, Smith-Shawver, Rocker, Leiter, Zebby Matthews, all in like 71 to 76 ish. Okay. But then I have like a lot of like closer to 100 is filled with like kind of boring guys for me, like Stroman and Littell and Bassett and people like that. I will say around 100 upside, I have DL Hall again.
I have him at 122.
I have him at 96. I'm going to do it again. I don't care. Yeah. If he's in the rotation at the start of the year, I'm going to do it again. I believe in it. Everything I thought this year, I still believe in. He wasn't fully healthy. And when he came up at the end of the year, like he was interesting again. The velocity was back. Like, absolutely. If he's got a rotation.
I might actually be raising DL Hall because it might be more solidified in the rotation again. And if his arm angle is correct, then maybe this is the same guy we were hoping for last year. So I totally hear that one. Where do you have?
A FOMO thing too. Of like, can you imagine?
I know
he was my most rostered player coming out of draft.
Yeah, I know. Being a year too early is the worst.
If I turned the page and didn't draft him, and he had a huge year, and I had him nowhere, I would bang my head into a wall just over and over.
That's why I just got Reagans everywhere. I didn't care. And also, like, I fell into the Reed Detmers thing. Sadly, not this year, but the year before, I was like, no, I need to be the money guy. I'm like, no, it's okay. But I do want to ask specifically, and just actually, so many rambles. Small thing quickly. I heard you list off a couple guys, like Zebby Matthews was in there, David Festa was in there, the same kind of grouping with Kumar Rocker and Jobe and whatnot. And my philosophies when it comes to young guys is that they have to be overpowering. Like absolutely overpowering, and not more of your, not necessarily the Schmalenbach type, but the more like the more boring. The Povich's, the Tobias Myers, right? Yeah. So like I put Zebby Matthews in that, for example. I kind of put Festa now more in that than I do like a Leiter, Rocker, and Jobe. So I have distance with those. Sean Burke is more overpowering to me, but this is a theory kind of thing, and it could be very much wrong of like Zebby Matthews turns into that and actually is becoming more of that like sturdy one, you know? So I have three guys I got to know where you're going to put them. Okay. Where you put them now, at least. First, Bowden Francis.
59 currently.
Oh gosh. Okay. Luis L. Ortiz.
I've only ranked 107 and I have not gotten to Luis L. Ortiz.
He is 107.
Right. But right now I have, I'm sitting at like Aaron Ashby, Jake Irvin. I feel like if I really get into it, like I could see Luis L. Ortiz in that, like just outside the top 100 for me.
And Ranger Suarez.
66 with Nestor, right next to Nestor Cortez.
So I should actually say, because Gavin Stone's gone, I have to give one up on these. So Luis L. Ortiz is now 106. Ranger Suarez, 110.
Interesting.
And the way I see with Ranger Suarez is the perfect example of a Toby. I have him in the Toby tier here.
And that's, and that makes sense. Like, I will say that what helped me so much when I was doing my actual rankings this year was the buckets that you had mentioned.
Yeah.
I did not bucket this. I just kind of like,
oh, I see.
Really flashed, like went through it on how guys were doing this year, what I thought about like their overall, like, overall stats. But when I did the buckets with you, you know, after your suggestion, like some guys dropped 20 spots and it wasn't because they got worse. It was because I was thinking, okay, this is a range of
bucketing is the
fine ratio pitchers who aren't going to strike out a ton of guys. And maybe Ranger Suarez is in that.
Yeah. Right. It's really hard because, I mean, that's other Toby tier, the one that's like currently 73 to 85. Like, has the Red Sox boys, has Bayo and Crawford and Pivetta and Houck and Jose Berríos and Cody Bradford. Like, those are not bad players at all. Right. I trust those a little bit more than Bowden Francis. I think what we saw with Bowden Francis is just completely like illusions.
I guess this goes back to like, we have a clear pitch mix that tied to it, and so I want to believe in it, but maybe I'm believing too much.
Watch a game of his and just be like, is this right?
I will say I have Bayo 79 right now. I have Bayo 79, and he could 81. Be in my, he could be in my top 50 by the middle of spring training. Like, I just still believe in him so much as a pitcher that I need to see the whole arsenal come together. But if I have, and maybe this is again my Red Sox fandom also factoring in, but if I see anything in spring training that makes me think we're actually going to see the pieces fit together at the same time, I'm going to be very aggressive in making sure I draft him, because I believe in the individual pieces, and I think if they come together in the package, we're going to get a really good season.
Yeah. Yeah. The I'm trying to move away from, I think, like a guy like Bayo, to me, I can't quite believe he's going to be consistent. And even if I see it in spring training, I don't think it's going to be enough for me to feel like, I guess I'll say this. If I see in spring training that he goes a full start and just like, he's totally just doing what he wants to do and then does it again the next day or so, then I might actually believe it. I think watching the Brian Bayo that I have this year a lot is, even inside of games, he had like an inning or two that it was there and then it wasn't. And it felt back and forth. And I know this is very much my own brand of it, and not really like the projection speaking of it. However, I'm really trying to lean away from those that I'm trying to lean away from those that are inconsistent inside of games of execution, and leaning into those who, for especially for spring training, that have a generalized consistency in execution, but they need a stuff increase. Mm-hmm. They need a velocity increase. They need a pitch approach increase with that, you know, or they have, of course, a new pitch that is now good in getting swing strikes. Those are the ones I'm trying to favor more, because, you know, the thing like Ranger Suarez is a perfect example, I think, of, hey, that's a guy I'm down on. He does great. He looks really amazing. And it's there early on. And it's like, see, this is the thing you should have chased, Nick. And then it doesn't for the second half, right? And it's just a moment. It's a bubble. And I'm trying to avoid moments that could be bubbles, as opposed to things that I feel are more hammered in and proper growth. I'm not saying that can't be Bayo. I think the lesson I learned from chasing Bayo all year was I needed to be more strict or punish the fact that he was as volatile as he was, you know?
I fully get that. And I understand trying to avoid that volatility. I mean, it all makes sense. No arguments, no pushbacks.
It's going to be a fun one. We got so many to talk. I mean, there's I could just for ages with Eric. Eric is the best. Appreciate him also just letting me ramble on, and all of you listening. But I think, Eric, this is going to be the end of this one.
This is the end of this one, and we'll get some.
Can't wait to do our little mini dives through all of this.
It's going to be fun, and it will help. You know, it helps us, but hopefully, it helps you, the listener, as well. Kind of like figure out where to put these guys, and hopefully, it'll help you in the off season scratch that baseball itch, and just kind of like, even if you're not fully, you know, doing your rankings or whatever it is, you're just starting to think about who these pitchers are and you know, what will help in your process. And, you know, instead of having to like cram everything in the second half of February, maybe you start slowly making your list alongside of us as we talk about.
Oh, please do that, everyone. Pitching. That anytime that I hear anyone talk about a rank, how could you put this guy this way? I'm like, please tell me all the people that you put ahead and below. Like, it's don't listen to the number. Listen to the field. Yeah. Okay. And
ranking is a humbling experience. If you want to rank your top 100 just for yourself, you're just going to be like, man, this is difficult.
It is. I think also that my rankings are not the answer. It is not the only one that you should listen to, not the gospel. It should be utilized for yourself as a framework, and whatever you think that I'm leaning into aggressively or not or whatever, adjust. And I'm all for having these discussions with everyone listening too. I just need to hear where you are on these other things as well, so that we can get on it. Right. A lot of times I remember actually like last year, first pitch Arizona, you're too low on Blake Snell with, you know, Saris is a famous moment. And then he looked, I was like, oh, we have him at 29. Like, we're not far, you know, all of that. So I hope to be able to do that with all of you. Hope to see you guys at first pitch Arizona. We're going to have a live podcast there. We're going to be there in like 3 weeks.
I'm very excited. We're working on my presentation. We're chatting about it.
Yeah. Go sign up for First Pitch Arizona. I cannot emphasize this enough. It is like the best weekend of the year. And if you're going, introduce yourself. Say hi to us sure. if you've never talked to us before. This is our favorite time to meet all of you and be in the same room where we all just want to talk about the same exact thing. So hope to see you guys there. Go to baseballhq.com to go sign up for First Pitch Arizona. But Eric, oh my gosh. So good to see you, man.
You too, buddy. I'm excited to keep this going in the offseason. I am Eric Smolski, the Pelican.
I'm Nick Pollock, the Lion.
And I'm going to go watch that Bowden Francis start real quick.
Yes. Go.
Bye. Wow, so see you later.